Tune in for an exclusive and permanent deal just for you. Get ready to immerse yourself in nature with an ongoing offer of 20% off all Strawberry Cough feminized cannabis seeds, exclusively designed for our valued podcast listeners. When you head over to homegrowncannabisco.com and use code COUGH20 at checkout, that's COUGH20. It's time to embrace the power of nature and embark on a growing experience like no other. Hey there, beloved growers and green thumbs. Welcome back to another enlightening episode of Grow Weed at Home with Kyle Cushman. Freshly returned to our sunny California roots, our spirits are still riding high from the extraordinary International Cannabis Awards held in the enchanting city of Barcelona, Spain. Immersing ourselves in the age-old traditions and pioneering spirit of the renowned Choco Barcelona was a heartfelt reminder of how universal our love for the plant truly is. In this very special episode, I've got the immense pleasure of sharing the mic with none other than the revered Swami Chaitanya, a true sage in the realm of cannabis cultivation. Swami has been a guiding light in the community, especially when it comes to the art and science of growing cannabis the way nature intended, organically and under the vast open sky. Together, Swami and I will take you on a journey through the wonders of organic sun-grown cannabis, exploring not just its environmental benefits, but also its profound impact on quality and therapeutic value. We'll peel back the layers of modern cultivation practices to reveal the timeless principles of harmony with nature that underpin truly great cannabis. Expect to dive deep into discussions about the intricacies of soil health, the magic of the sun spectrum, and the holistic practices that bring out the best in the plant. Swami's wisdom paired with the tales from our own experiences promise to illuminate the path to cultivating not just cannabis, but a deeper connection with the earth itself. So whether you're tending to your first plant or you're a seasoned cultivator of towering trees, join Swami and me as we celebrate the plant in its most natural and majestic form. This is Grow Weed at Home with Kyle Cushman, where we're not just growing cannabis, we're growing connections. Let's get rooted in the wonders of organic sun-grown cannabis together. Well, hello again, everybody, and look who we have here, my really good friend, Swami Chaitanya.
How you doing, everybody? Glad to be here.
How are you feeling today?
I'm going to be great as soon as I get this joint lit. This is what, this one, the strawberry cough and what?
Yeah, at the moment, I'm smoking local weed, and Swami is smoking my weed. He's smoking my Starberry cough.
Starberry cough, yeah, it was great. Had a great dry hit, complex flavor.
It's a very special smoke. I've been carrying that around for over 20 years.
Oh, really? Yeah. No, this ain't that old.
Not the bud. Okay. I won the first annual San Francisco Medical Cup in 2012 with that.
Okay.
Yeah. What do you know? We've all got amazing history.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're all here for the International Cannabis Awards, which you're also an ambassador of.
Yes.
And we're also here for Spanibus.
Right.
And we're here at the wonderful Choco Lounge.
Yeah, though, very, very friendly place. Wonderful people, great host.
Yes. We already got to share a meal together last night, which was
right.
Pretty wonderful.
Tapas, Spanish style in Barcelona.
Man, you know, the history here at this place, this wonderful city of Barcelona, never gets tired of mentioning. It's a really, really wonderful place.
Oh, it's a beautiful city. See, I live way up in the mountains of Northern California, surrounded by pine trees and open meadows and lots of animals and so on. Here I am now in a big city, and really one of the most beautiful cities in the world, I have to say, with the architecture and just the people on the street. There's so much vibrancy and young people and so on. It's really, really exciting to be here.
Yeah, it's not like, you do live in a very wonderful place. I love Mendocino as well. I love Northern California. But it's not a lot of places when you're in America around this many people where you feel as comfortable saying hello to anybody.
Yeah. No, it's just, and it's real lively on the streets and friendly and so on. So
it
yeah,
is.
It's fun
it's
to
nice.
Be here.
And Swami, you're a very well-traveled person.
Yes, indeed.
I thought I would ask you just a little, you know, I like to get a little history in before we project into the future. Tell us a little bit about your history with this city or Spain in general.
Oh, well, actually, I kind of started a little before that. When I was between freshman and sophomore year in college, I spent 3 months in Germany living with a German family. So I learned to speak German. I learned about how you live in Europe, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I drank my first wine, stuff like that.
Wow.
Right? So it was very interesting to be here. And then Actually, many years ago, I came to visit the island of Ibiza, which is just off the coast here, and had to go through Barcelona, of course, right? And so because my son was there with my ex-wife, so I got to know the whole Spanish culture, especially the Ibiza kind of style, which is very similar to Barcelona. And it's a whole sort of civilized way. At dinner time, everybody sits around, you talk for hours and hours and have another glass of wine and so on. And it's just sitting around and relaxing. And
then, of course, there's the siesta, too, which is nice.
Well, that's true, too. And, of course, normally in the summer, people don't have dinner until 10 o'clock at
night.
And I can remember being in Toledo and having this gazpacho that was just fantastic, right? But there's so much ancient stuff here, but also very modern stuff. I'm amazed at how modern, like our hotel is extremely modern.
Gorgeous.
It's really beautiful, but simple.
But since you look out the back courtyard, and there's nothing modern there. It's all been there for 100 years or more.
Oh, that's not even old.
Right.
And you're 100
years. Listen to me. Listen to the youngin. That's why I'm getting some perspective from a more well-traveled person.
But I've traveled also. I lived in India for many years, in Nepal and so on, Thailand. And in South America, I lived for 3 years. So I really have been a lot of places. The city that might even be closest to Barcelona is Argentina in Buenos Aires. Very sophisticated cosmopolitan culture with a lot of nightlife and so on. Yeah. So anyway, it's a thrill to be here. But it's also interesting that, you know, cannabis in Barcelona and Spain is also a big deal, although it's not technically legal, right? We're in this private club, which makes it sort of private event.
You know, I certainly don't understand the intricacies of it, but there is a legality to it. It may be very narrow, right? But we wouldn't be talking about it if there was not a legality.
Right, on a private premises with private invitation people.
But nonetheless, it's almost like California when they first passed Prop 215 and they said, you can have it, but where are you going to get it? Right?
So and nobody's asking that question.
There you go, right?
And you know what? That market was actually a very good market for the independent grower. Right?
Oh, it was fabulous. It was wonderful.
Yeah.
It was, you know, it wasn't just wonderful monetarily. It was wonderfully inspiring because I had generally been a bit of an outlaw since I left home at 16. And sometimes it wasn't the friendly stuff like cannabis, you know, it was other drugs. And you don't really get creative with selling cocaine or selling ecstasy or selling, there's no creativity to it, you know? So when I found cannabis, not only did I find something that I could, there's no middleman any longer. I was producing my own product, and that was certainly fabulous from a monetary, but there was like a newfound creativity to it. That was the most amazing part. And that's what led me here. If it was just a simple transaction, I wouldn't be sitting here talking to you.
Well, there was a special thing about the cannabis, for one thing, is that for me, it was a secret society. And you were either in it or you didn't know about
it.
And those people who were in it had our special ways of communication with sign languages and special words and so on, secret codes and so on, you know. And there were ways that we had to be protective of one another because everyone had the same risk. If you were a grower, you had the same risk as a person with one joint, right? And so we shared that risk. And so it was kind of a secret society. I kind of compare it to the Harry Potter society. We were kind of magicians working our magic and altering people's consciousness. And yet we still had to be kind of hidden within the middle of society.
But long before I found that, I was really alone in the woods. I was alone in the woods of upstate New York. I didn't have a grower community, okay? I went years without ever meeting another grower. I was literally the person. If you knew me, I was the only person you knew in the entire world that grew marijuana. Well, so to be able to imbibe creativity within that paradigm, how special was that? So then later on, I gave up growing to work for High Times. Now that I'm going to make this all about me, I gave up growing to work for High Times because I couldn't be a journalist in New York City and still grow.
Right.
That was another spark of creativity. Then I moved to California and got to continue my creativity. It wasn't really primarily to sell weed anymore.
It was more to build up a reputation.
But the creativity was focused around the music scene in so many ways, right?
Right.
And the music scene was where the poster art came and the new songs and all the fancy clothing and all of that. And that was really happening. See, I got to San Francisco in the summer of love, right? And I had a studio right on Haight Street. And we used to move pounds through our studio, right? And so we got to actually roll as many joints as we could. So every morning I'd roll like 20 joints of Mexican weed, and we just drive all over town, pick up hitchhikers, get stoned and everything else, right? And then head to a coffee shop. But we were artists. We were always drawing. We were always, you know, going to various concerts. And you know, we were really in the underground, and we had a whole sort of recognition of one another. So, and we'd go to Golden Gate Park and just trip out down to the ocean. I mean, it was just an amazing time. There was also a spiritual quality, because at that point, Steve Gaskin had his Monday night classes, and we'd all go down and we would all get together, and people would be tripping on acid, smoking. The Merry Pranksters. Well, they were right around that same time with Ken Kesey and so on. So, yeah, the whole Haight-Ashbury was just teeming with creativity, to come back to that point, with people, not only just artists and poster artists, but people who created with their clothing, creative people would build crazy houses up in the mountains just because they could do anything they wanted, right? Because it was like off the grid, underground, there were no rules, right?
And then there was an amazing amalgamation and like nexus of the music industry and the drug.
Well, see,
and
a lot of the money from the drug world, not just cannabis, but that's what paid for the rock bands and the concerts, right? Because the dealers were making so much money, they spread it around in the community, actually. They really did.
So, yeah, it was a much simpler time, even just 20 years ago, when I actually moved to Mendocino and got dropped into this amazing culture.
Yeah.
Of growing weed in the morning and heading out on the lake and wakeboarding all day, you know, and going back. And see, that's what I found so interesting was that within this community of outlaws, who for the most part really were together and did watch out for each other's backs, there was an amalgamation of a lot of different kind of people.
That's true.
You had the monster truck guys, you know, that didn't mind flaunting that they had at least $80,000 to buy this big old truck zooming up and down the roads. And then you had guys that were much more incognito.
A good bit of the weed at that time was smuggled, right? It was coming in from Mexico, you know, first of all in backpacks, and then they'd take an old RV or something like that, gut the interior, fill it full of weed, and then put the interior back in and smuggle it in, come by sailboats, right? Sailboats from Puerto Vallarta, right? And then eventually from Thailand and from Colombia and so on. So that's kind of how we got to know the rest of the world. Everybody's, you know, importing weed from all these different places. And so, you know, you go to Colombia and there's like great weed in Santa Marta, right? And you're up in the mountains and all of a sudden you find, you know, psilocybin mushrooms growing out in the cow shed house in the pasture. So, you know, it was just an amazing, amazing time, and people were able to go all over the place.
You know, I have a goal in life. And one of my goals in life is just to make sure that to be an example that smoking the joint is not old fashioned. Like, I want to make sure that 20 years from now, you can still go to a festival and somebody's still smoking. It's not all just a clear liquid or a vape. You can do vape pens, you can dab, you can do THCA, you can do all these wonderful things. But the reason why I say this is, a few years ago, I went to a show in LA. It wasn't a big show. It was just a club. And somebody took me backstage. I had backstage. And I showed up with some of my weed, all pre-rolled in nice joints. And I offered a joint to a guy who obviously got high. And he said, "No, I don't smoke weed anymore." What he meant was he only vapes. And I just thought, what a travesty.
Well, see, I have a whole theory about that, which is to say, when you do a vape, you're concentrating everything to like 80% THC, right? In a vape, that's what the concentrate is.
You're hitting your endocannabinoid system with 80% THC.
Right, and that's just one out of 150 different cannabinoids that the flower will give you, in addition to the possible, you know, 200 different terpenes, in addition to all those other flavonoids and ketones and esters and all those other things which give aroma to the cannabis.
That's right. One word, Tim, it's bastardized. It's
well, when you get the full flower, you get the total experience of everything that cannabis has to offer. It's complete range of chemical compounds, right?
And the effects you get are...
And that's why we've done it for 4,000 years.
And the effects you get are the ones that the plant intended to impart on you.
Yes, exactly.
It is not enhanced, nor refined, nor exaggerated.
Plus, you know, it's just a good smoke, man.
How do you like that?
It's just a really good... I'm liking it. Yeah, it's really nice. Now, you say it's...
Unlike this one, I had to relight it many times.
You say it's really young.
Yes.
Right. No, so we were going to talk about this idea of vintage cannabis, right? So this is like, what, 7 days old or something like that?
It's barely seven days old, yes.
So there's something about cannabis that's actually taken to its full term of maximum maturity out in the sun, I have to say, as a sun grower. I know you're
sure.
The king of indoor growers, but...
We can try as much as we can to mimic.
But you have something about full term, 7 months in the sun, right? And then harvested at its peak, right? And that's when all of a sudden now these are possible, over almost 1,000 compounds possible in cannabis, they're all at their peak moment, right? So you get that. And then the next idea is how do you dry it and age it? And, you know, the whole idea is we dry ours in a wooden barn. So it's like a gigantic wine barrel that we're drying this cannabis in for a minimum of 2 weeks at 60 degrees, 60% humidity.
And then, and when he says minimum, that's the minimum that he would let it go to anybody. He cures it much, we cure cannabis much longer than that.
Well, that's just the drying. Mm. Once you snap it and put it in, then there's the aging. Now, I don't like curing the word so much. It's more just aged, because we don't do anything with it. Like when you cure tobacco, you ferment it, you toast it, you do all these things to make tobacco, and 3 years after harvest, tobacco's ready to smoke. With cannabis, people want it out the door as fast as they can, especially indoor, right?
Such a shame.
Right? Where I'm going to hold it at least two weeks for it to dry.
Mm-hmm.
Then I'm going to take it down and put it in a brown paper bag that I call a burrito. So I wrap up these brown paper things like this, and that then will sit for a couple of months until I'm ready to bucket and then trim it, right? So I don't think that my flower is really ready to smoke the way I like it until at least March after harvest in October. And so that's like 5 months, right? And so my weed, I won't even really hardly smoke it until 5 months after.
How do you create the perfect environment for that long-term cure?
Well, I like I say, I have this wooden barn, but the barn is in the middle of a forest of Doug fir trees.
So it doesn't heat up?
It stays pretty much in. It'll get a little bit colder, get a little bit more humid. It's got this sort of thing like this. But we're now learning about a drying of cannabis. One of the ways that the stuff off gases, and that has to do with what is the actual air pressure in the room.
Right.
So when there's lower air pressure, more is evaporating. When there's higher air pressure, more stays in the flower. So now we're really now in the scientific way of drying, really focusing in on the air pressure as well as the temperature.
So you're saying the elevation helps?
The elevation can help. Yeah. And you know what? If you think around the world, the best cannabis is always grown outdoors at elevation.
Sure.
All the way around the world. Now, part of that is because it's secret, right? But also there's something about there's more sunlight in higher rays of UV and ultraviolet, right? And there's also different air pressure. So that's the thing. And those are some of the other things that as good as indoor is, and as much as we need indoor, it can never quite match those ideal conditions of growing cannabis in the full sun at elevation.
You know, I'm a very literal person. Not always good, but it does help understand the world around you sometimes. And I've always seen it. I think the major difference, apart from the things like light spectrum and just, it's the minute, it's the light cycle. It's a minute longer, shorter every day. And of course, the light movement. Of course, the light movement.
Color of the light coming
right
through the atmosphere,
right,
and so on.
And
right,
of course, these plants have evolved over eons to adapt to the best possible scenario to that. So as much as we can mimic you know, temperature. We can maximize. See, this is the thing. Sometimes, unwittingly, when we go to quote unquote maximize things, and even though there may be scientific data behind it, okay, limited scientific data, of course, by the people who did it, you know, I mean, I'm not saying it's nefarious or disingenuous, but it's not worldly necessary, because you're right, all the best wheat always is grown at elevation. That is much, even though personally, I've tried to mimic everything I possibly can. And the one thing I've never been able to do is the 1 minute longer each day, 1 minute shorter each day.
Right, right, right.
Because that would take way too long. You know? Imagine doing that indoors. Imagine spending electricity to grow a 6 month plant.
Well, right. But that gets incorporated into the price.
It's not that you can't make a timer to do that. Could have done that a long time ago. But it's so impractical to try to mimic that. You understand? So what indoor growers do is we focus on other factors that we can optimize.
Right, right.
Right?
Well, see, I'm not against indoor so much.
When we do that, who says that we're actually optimizing? Because we're immediately throwing the plant
but
out of its own homeostasis.
Cannabis is a very adaptable plant.
Sure.
So it's adapting to growing indoors. And we are a situation, we don't know what the climate's going to be in whatever years. And we have many places in the world where cannabis won't grow very well. So that, for me now, I realize indoor growing is absolutely essential. And cannabis will adapt to it, right?
Absolutely.
And and growing will adapt to cannabis. It'll be a two-way kind of street. So, you know, how are we going to grow on the moon? We're going to have to grow indoors on the moon, right? So I think the research of indoor is very, very important, right? But I'm still going to smoke my sun-grown, right? Because that, what you're talking about, it does automatically, right? But also remember, as an adapted plant, it's also growing up really far north. And it's growing at the equator. All of those have different light situations.
Do you know how dabbing or doing concentrates has a very quick up and a very quick down? There's the same relation between indoor weed and outdoor weed. Ipso facto, I believe that the timing, because you'll never get creeper indoor weed. There's no such thing as creeper indoor weed, okay?
Yeah.
I always call it a different animal. Outdoor weed is a completely different
animal.
Right,
it is. And I don't think we should even compare them.
And the reason the high can last so much longer and be subtle at first and come on, it has to do with that minute long, the photo period. The trichome development, the cannabinoid development happens not only at a different pace, it happens in different ratios.
Right, right.
Because of the lack of one spectrum at one angle at one photo period. So it's no wonder that the high is shorter lived, maybe more pronounced, but much shorter lived, right? Just like when you do the dab.
And likewise, it won't last more than 5 months. People want to smoke your indoor weed within 3 to 4 months. I don't want to smoke my outdoor weed until after 4 months,
right?
And I'm still, for me, when my favorite weed right now is from 2022, and I also have still some from 2021, right?
See, that's amazing. And it's amazing for a few reasons. One of them is you live in one of the most optimal areas of at least our country for doing that. And it is in your specific area, it is also optimal. There's places in your county and in your place where there's no barns that you could do that without. So
we have the cleanest air and the cleanest water in the world.
But
dude,
what I try to do is I have to try to manipulate everything from water content to humidity and temperature so that and or timing is extremely crucial. I can extensively cure my weed in a jar if I get it in there. I don't have to use the word cure. I can use age.
Yeah, I like
that
better.
But the distinction between cure and age to me, as I define it, is that curing involves some form of metabolic process, where aging does not necessarily.
No, you're wrong. It's all a metabolic process.
unless
it's when you harvest, the plant's technically dead, but its biological activity continues on for at least 2 more years.
Right? Unless it's overdried.
Well, but even then, it'll go. But if you're looking for the finest, the reason I don't look to use the word cure is, to me, and I'm doing this with Kev Jodry also, we really talk about this a lot, which is to say, curing is where you actively do something to a product.
Okay, well,
you
that's what I do. That's what I do, right? Is it not? That's what I was saying. I have to use, I have to manipulate, because I don't have the perfect environment. So I have to manipulate.
I'm just talking about the drying of it, right? And so I'm not toasting it. I'm not fermenting it like they do with tobacco, right?
But I am storing it, burping it, adjusting the humidity. Is that not curing?
I don't think so. I think that's just aging it and doing it properly.
I'll buy that. Right? But nonetheless, the distinction, but
now,
the difference
maybe
we're
splitting leaves here.
Nonetheless, what the important distinction to make for the viewers and listeners who are interested and are wanting to learn is that Swami is really only able to talk about 2-year cured weed, 2-year aged weed, because he has found himself the perfect environment. And maybe not it's solely because of that, but I'm just saying when I attempt to do that, it takes extreme manipulation.
I take the environment that's given to me. I move to a place, but then the environment changes every month, every part of the month, as moon cycle, as spring, as summer, as fall comes along. You, in your word, you said you manipulate your environment. That's what you have to do. And
right.
They're not, they don't call it indoor anymore. They call it controlled environment agriculture.
Right,
right.
Right.
And so the word is control, and what you said by manipulate. I take what nature gives me.
Right.
Right, and sometimes it's freezing out there at harvest time.
Right.
It's pouring rain
right.
at harvest time. Or, you know, bugs come in and so on. So yeah, I think most indoor people want a kind of pure, almost sterile environment with new soil every year and so on. Now, people are changing. I know they're doing natural farming. But I have my environment is full of microbial life. So I have total life of all forms, and some of it good and some of it bad. And so that's what I have to try. I can't control it, but I have to kind of keep certain things within a balance that they naturally achieve, so on. So, for example, now I have my whole garden with cover crop so that keeps the negative bacteria and negative plants from coming in. And these cover crops, they actually collect nitrogen out of the air and put it in the soil, which then is available for the plant in the springtime, right?
Is that the definition of nitrogen fixing?
That's exactly right.
I literally thought that nitrogen... Okay, well, is there other nitrogen fixers that fix in the soil?
Let me explain what happened. We say that plants are nitrogen fixing, but then when I did some research on that, that's simplifying it, because what happens is certain plants create an atmosphere in their root ball. That's called the rhizosphere,
rhizosphere,
right? So by that plant's roots, it has a certain bacterial fungal life there. And that then attracts things that come to it. And what happens is, as nitrogen falls out of the air, it doesn't fall out of the air. It comes in everything that falls with it, like animal poop and leaves and branches and everything else. But the plant is surrounded by nitrogen all day long, but it can't take that nitrogen out of the air.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny, the air is 70% nitrogen. The plant can't take it out. It has to take it out of the ground. So there's things in the ground that take the nitrogen that's in various animals and leaves and so on and transforms it in the earth into nitrates and ammonium, which is what the plant can absorb. The plant can't absorb nitrite. Mm-hmm. It can't absorb pure nitrogen. It has to absorb nitrate and also ammonium. And that's what the plant brings up to use. And it uses nitrogen for its building, for its construction, right? But it needs it out of the plants. And what happens is the root ball brings in these microbes that process the nitrogen from the plants and so on and turn them into availability. And some plants do it better than others. If you pull up nitrogen-fixing plants now, I see little white balls of nitrogen around the roots, literally little white ball.
Man.
And that's so you're actually putting nitrogen in the soil naturally from the air through plant changes, which then the roots bring up. And by the way, the roots do another thing. Not only do they bring up, they also do a thing that's called exude. They exude sugar. So the roots of your plant, any plant, but particularly cannabis, exudes sugar. And what does that do? It attracts bacteria and fungi that eat the sugar and use that for their growth. So there's an exchange process between the plant roots and the things that are there. Plants bringing up and giving out. It's this amazing process.
Growing in any sense of the word is a balance. It's about balance.
Yes.
Whether it's personal growth, cultivation, right? And
well, the inputs have to be in a balance. As you're putting thing in, see, when I have to admit to everybody, when I first grew my first plants right in downtown San Francisco on Telegraph Hill, I used, what is that called, Miracle Grow.
You didn't.
I did, the very first time.
Oh, my goodness. Even I never used Miracle Grow.
But I someone said to me, you got to feed them. I said, what? I never even knew you had to feed plants. Well, who knows, right? And so,
feed me, Seymour.
But actually, my aunts and uncles had a dairy farm in upstate New York, so I used to spend my summers there, and we would spread manure on the fields and so on from the cattle that we were milking for the cows and so on. So I should have known that plants needed food. But for me, it was like, wow, and you put that Miracle-Gro on, and boom, you watch it jump back quick, right?
Right. Right. Rocket and, fuel.
But now, over the years, I say that because over the years, I've just gradually, bit by bit, learned more and more about the process and, okay, what does the plant need and so on. And, okay, you need nitrogen, phosphorus, then needs 14 different elements, right? And then you start to realize, well, maybe the forest doesn't get watered. The forest doesn't get fertilized. The forest doesn't get cultivated. It just somehow grows itself. And they call that the law of return. So everything in the forest that falls down, whether it's, you know, deer poop or dead animals or leaves or twigs or whatever it is, all of that eventually gets buried down. And like 10 years later, what was up here is now 2 feet down and it's now soil. And it happened naturally. So the plant and everything in the forest is actually creating its own food through its death and decay and defecation.
It's all a symbiosis.
Yeah, it's all connected.
And you being a very, I don't know, I don't like to boil it down to one word, but you're an inspiring person. And I really like talking with you. And Michael Pollan, who wrote The Botany of Desire, and amused whether we attached ourselves to the cannabis plant or the cannabis plant attached itself to us. But either way, it's a two-way growth.
You're definitely symbiotic.
It's a two-way
and
growth.
What we understand is they found some caves up in the back end of China, Russia, Soviet Union, caves where there are 4,000-year-old remains up there, and they found cannabis in a leather sack, right? But cannabis comes from that area. It's called the Heavenly Mountains, which divide China from Russia. And this is where cannabis originated, right? Probably 19 million years ago, cannabis separated from hops, right? But they found fabric in caves in that same area, and that fabric dates from 20,000 years ago, and it's made from hemp. So we've got this relationship with hemp that's at least 20,000 years. So imagine now, you're somewhere on a campfire out in the steppes, and you just harvested these hemp plants. Why? Because they have seeds. And you're not growing wheat or corn or anything. You're getting hemp seeds that grow naturally, and it's huge. I eat hemp seeds every day. It's great protein environment,
and
right?
It truly is one of our first resources.
Totally.
One of our earliest
and so
resources.
Now you're sitting around the fire, and a young guy over here, he just finished pulling off these seeds out of the cannabis, and he just throws the leaves and flowers into the fire. And they're
next thing you know, euphoria.
And they're all kind of laughing around. But then the young guy's over there, he pulls on the stalk, and he pulls out this long fiber, right? And then pretty soon he's kind of twisting it up, and all of a sudden he makes rope. Right? And then his sister over there puts fiber and she makes off a weaving. So this is how cannabis, I think, is involved in our human evolution. It's helped us create rope and fabric. It helped create medicine, you know, and it's all about the human evolution with cannabis.
You hear that, folks? It's not just a terpene-infused liquid.
Right. Right. And terpenes are only a minor part of the aroma, I want to point out.
My people are telling me we're going over here. Always a really awesome conversation.
Okay, bro.
Thank you very
much.
What
did we not cover? just about everything, huh?
That was a really awesome conversation. Thanks for coming on Grow Weed at Home Barcelona.
Yeah, thank you. It's great
to be
here.
Have a great trip.
All right. See you around the next few days. Bye, everybody.
Well, everybody, that was another great episode with Swami. Swami and Nikki of Swami Selects. Boy, I'm a little bit sad to hear they're not growing this year, but I'm sure they have other wonderful things to tend to for the year. The insights that he gives are always entertaining. I love spending time with Swami, especially in Barcelona and at Choco Lounge, where the hospitality was just amazing. I think I ate enough jamón, that's ham and cheese sandwiches for the next year. But thanks for tuning in. We'll see you again soon for another great episode of Grow Eat at Home. Guac! Are you ready to take your cannabis cultivation game to the next level? Well, hold on to your buds because we have an amazing offer just for you. Are you familiar with Strawberry Cough? This legendary strain has delighted cannabis enthusiasts worldwide with its mouthwatering flavor and uplifting effects. Lineage? Sure, let's dive into it. Strawberry Cough is a delicious cross between Strawberry Fields and Haze. Its distinct strawberry aroma and sweet taste make it a favorite among connoisseurs. Now, here's the exciting news. We're offering a fantastic deal on Strawberry Cough feminized cannabis seeds. You'll receive 20% off your purchase on any pack size of these seeds when you use code COUGH20. That's COUGH20. That's COUGH20 at homegrowncannabisco.com. Don't miss out on this incredible opportunity to grow your own Strawberry Cough. Whether you're a seasoned cultivator or a newbie looking to explore the world of marijuana horticulture, these feminized seeds will set you on the path to aromatic success. Visit homegrowncannabisco.com today and select from their wide range of premium cannabis seeds and maybe take advantage of 20% off your Strawberry Cough seeds when using code COUGH20. Happy growing, folks! Get ready to savor the tantalizing flavors and uplifting effects of Strawberry Cough, a strain that deserves a spot in every cannabis enthusiast's garden. Check out homegrowncannabisco.com now and seize this offer before it's gone.